my God. Hello and hi, and welcome back to another episode of A Tiny Revolution. I'm Kevin. You're in the right place. Don't worry, you didn't get lost on the way to your podcast feed this morning. You did it, buddy. Aww. I'm so glad to be back in the swing of creating things and moving and grooving, and just I feel like I'm growing in a lot of different directions. So let's just get into it. Before I tell you who's on the show today, and you know her, you love her, it's Jamie Lee Finch, aka the Sex Witch herself, and also one of my really good Judies, and someone who has just like really allowed me to grow into myself. Like, what a woman, seriously. But anyways, before I tell you about her, let me tell you about what's going on in my life. Three things. One, if you're somebody out there who has been wanting to get a tarot card reading / spiritual direction session with me, I've actually changed to a sliding scale. So if you are somebody out there and is like, oh, I can't afford that kind of stuff, hit me up. Let's make it work. Let's put you on a payment plan if we have to. Let's cut up your payments into different things. No, you don't have to like qualify for shit like Klarna, because that stuff is classist and still based off of your credit score. I found it ill. Gross, because Lord knows the millennial generation got fucked as far as our credit scores are concerned, because, oh, we said go to college, they said. Get a degree, they said. You'll be happy, they said. Now look at us. Repairing our credit scores, blah, blah, blah. Anyways, so all to say, it's on a sliding scale now, and if you want to get a tarot reading, hit me up at thekevingarcia.com/tarot. Second thing, I've got my next online workshop happening next month, or excuse me, not next month, end of this month. It's going to be July 25th, 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It is an Introduction to Miraculous Living, a workshop dedicated to walking you through and reimagining your spirituality. It's going to be, we're going to be unpacking our limiting beliefs, talking about what it means to practice new techniques. We're going to talk about deep introspection. We're going to about learning to accepting, about accepting love and ourselves as it is and as we are, because it is something that is so important. We have to start moving ourselves in that direction. Tickets are going to be on sale by the time this goes live, and you can get all those details at thekevingarcia.com/events/. You can just look in the description for all that information. And best part, if you are a supporter on Patreon, just go to Patreon, get the code there, sign up. It's part of your perks at $25 or more a month, which is pretty incredible. So you can either like pay less by becoming a supporter and get an amazing workshop experience, or pay more and pay more. You know, whatever you want to do. It's really up to you. I love you. I hope to see you there. Last thing, the third thing. My book, Bad Theology Kills, is got a little price drop on it. All across the board, all products for Bad Theology Kills, the book, the ebook, Kindle, regular paperback, it's all price dropped all across the board, whether it's on my website or on Amazon. Go check it out. I would love for you to buy from my website if you're going to get an ebook, because I get more of the royalties that way. And the one you download from my website is compatible with Kindle. So go buy it there. It's just $11.11. Ooh, perfect. If you haven't read it yet, go download it. Okay, perfect. Or buy it. Buy it somewhere. You're helping me pay my bills, and I think the book's pretty good. Got some really good words on it, so don't believe me. Try it for yourself. And if you absolutely hate it, let me know so I can block you. I'm just kidding. Anyways, that's all for my my announcements. So why don't we go ahead and get into our conversation with my friend Jamie Lee Finch, the sexuality and embodiment coach, the intuitive healer, the self conversation facilitator, the sex witch, and poet. Simply put, Jamie Lee Finch is a relationship coach between humans and their own bodies. As a survivor of both childhood trauma and religious trauma, Jamie has a deep familiarity with the language used by those who come from the authoritarian backgrounds that we do, and those who have a desire to return to a feeling of wholeness within their bodies after years of assimilating to a belief that required them to separate from themselves. She believes that our bodies have a language, and that language is our mother tongue. Trauma in any form, including toxic experiences with authoritarian belief systems, is responsible for breaking down our ability to communicate successfully with our bodies. And because of this, the presence of illness, imbalance, dysfunction, dis-ease can often be considered our body's attempts to connect with and through us and to us. The work that Jamie is doing is reconnecting folks to their bodies, the language their body is speaking, and the voice their body is speaking with. It's a deep reconciliation, healing work, and it's healing mental, emotional, spiritual, and physical pain. She specializes in the reality of embodiment through the language of relationship, and she works with individuals of all genders who consistently find within themselves an inability to connect with, communicate with, and successfully relate to their own bodies, physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. In the conversation today, Jamie and I talk about everything from what it is to be coaches. Like, apparently I'm on a roll. I'm just talking to my coach friends. What it is to do the work that she does as a coach, what it is to be embodied, and what we've been learning. Now, just so you know, this conversation happened way, way, way back, probably close to 2 or 3 months ago. I was in the middle of finishing school, and coronavirus was just, we were still calling it coronavirus instead of COVID-19 at that point. So if there's a little bit of tone deafness in the conversation, you're just like, why aren't they talking about something that's important? It's because this conversation happened a while back. So there's that. Anyways, I love you. So grab yourself something to drink, move around a little bit, and enjoy this conversation with the one and only, the magical, the fantastic, the sexy lady herself, Jamie Lee Finch. Jumping on the pod / getting to hang out with you, this for me is a treat. So
I love this so much. I'm so excited. Also, how have we not ever done this before?
I think it's because we just I don't want to bring it in. It's it's one of those once we make it a work thing, it's
that's it. You're right. And you're 100%
right.
And I try
to because Jamie's over here in my friendship category. Mm-hmm. And I want everyone to read her work, but also I don't want to I don't want to make our relationship about
work. Job. Yeah.
Yeah.
I get that. That makes so much sense. And I also podcasts don't feel like work to me, maybe because I don't have one and I'm just a guest on other people's. And it's not because I talk for a living in my client sessions, but it's a totally different kind of talking that it feels like client session talking is work and podcast talking is play. Mm-hmm. And most of the podcasts I've done have just been people I think are cool that I feel like talking to, and then it just gets recorded, and then I sell a bunch of books. So I'm like, cool, that's great, that's awesome.
It's the best. I love doing it. And
I'm so glad you love having a podcast, because I would hate having a podcast. And so many people have been like, Jamie, when are you going to start your podcast? Never.
I'm just because it definitely takes work, and it definitely takes dedication, and.
Yeah.
I'm learning to love the process again after taking time off to write the book and get my stuff out there. I'm kind of relearning. I'm this doesn't have to be the exact same thing as it was before. Mm-hmm. And so giving myself permission to be more flexible with deadlines. And also it's just I usually stack all my podcasts. I have a bunch of interviews lined up. And so there's 5 or 6 that are pre-corona. And now all these interviews are someone's like, so if this conversation sounds tone deaf,
yeah,
it's because
you have to do those kind of disclaimers. I had written my whole automation sequence for my coven launch, my newsletter launch, and then was going to do another push for another round of client consultations so that I could start working on my course. The whole thing was planned out, and I wrote all that automation the weekend before the tornado hit Nashville. And then the tornado hit, and I was like, I just have to go do all that stuff. And so my life was put on hold for a week. Mm-hmm. And then I was going to launch, cause the tornado hit the 2nd, and I was going to launch on the 7th. And I was like, that feels tone deaf for me right now. I can't just let things be business as usual when my city is in.
Yeah. When my life is not business as usual.
And then a few days after tornado cleanup was not done, but a few days after, I felt that was that phase was coming to a close. It was all right, everyone buy 2 weeks worth of groceries because you're going to be stuck in your apartment for the foreseeable future. And I was okay. So, yeah, I'm just going to leave the all the stuff I wrote for it. It's just sitting in there because it doesn't make sense now. And I'm fine with that, but I'm trying to figure out what comes next. But it is this You can't just, you honestly can't use any of the content you made before March 2020 without telling people, hey, I made this before March 2020. I'm not just ignoring what's going on.
Yeah.
I didn't know yet.
Yeah. It was just, I was like, we didn't know. Uh-uh. And it's, I think in some ways, like, it does give us a little bit of a break from the thing. Because I'm having conversations with folks around, you know, body, sex, love, faith, religion, mm-hmm. etc. So, like, it does help with, I think, giving people a little bit of a mental break. So yeah, I'm thankful for that. So I would love to talk to you about, you know, a little bit about your shit, what you do. But, you know, the question I always tell people is just like, you are at a party and, you know, someone comes up and is like, hey, you look like an interesting person. What's your deal? And you would say,
I hate that question. I'm kidding.
No, I will say, now I will say the person you're encountering is not a rude person. They're not a, like, it's like, do I want to tell them what I do or do I want to tell them that I'm a consultant?
Well, because you're right. Because first of all, even the premise, you're like, so you're at a party. And I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm at home.
I forced you to come
to a party. And then, so I forced you to come out. No, even pre, like, quarantine, I'm at home. I'm not at a party. But even then, like, if I'm out, most of the time I'm just like, I am a coach, and I don't go into it much beyond that. But then everyone's like, oh, a life coach. And I'm like, no, I have to explain what it is, cause I'm not one of those, which is fine. I'm just not. But, how do I explain what it, I also feel like every time I want to try and explain what it is I do or how I do it, it feels like I have to rethink it. Cause I'm like, yeah, it's new every day. But I mean, I guess the best way I've ever found to describe it is that I mean, I'm a space holder for a living. I hold space for people, and the particular space that I most enjoy holding and feel best equipped to hold is as a relationship coach between humans and their own bodies. Mm-hmm. So regardless of what kind of human you are and what kind of body you have, because I think a lot of people are under the impression that I only work with, like, female identified individuals, and that's super not true. Because I don't feel like this, or not feel, I don't believe that all that this work of learning how to be with our bodies and know our bodies as, like, friends and partners, is work just for, like, you know, women. Even though a lot of what's marketed out there to people knowing and loving their bodies is marketed towards, like, you know, women.
Right.
So anyway, work with all genders, all bodies, anyone who has a body. I want to teach you that that body is a person, not an object. And that that person is not only just a person, but is your partner and your best friend, your closest companion, and everything that they have ever done has been in the direction of communicating necessary information to you and to try and make you as safe and as well and as loved as possible. So there's a lot that comes along with that. Sometimes it touches on relationships to food. Sometimes it touches on relationships to sex and sexuality and anything, you know, anything else in between that you could possibly imagine. A lot of people who are coming out of religious, like, fundamentalist and authoritarian religious backgrounds, who are learning, like, oh, my body matters as much as my spirit. And maybe I was lied to inside of that world about some things related to my body. So yeah, it covers a lot of ground, but the main point of the work is to learn that the person of your body is someone worth knowing, and that you are able to communicate with compassionately.
Yes. I think that's where people get really tripped up. It's just like, well, how do I do that? Like, just tell me the quick fix, like, tell me what to do. And I'm like, I mean, yeah. I could tell you how I do it right now, but I've also been practicing.
Yes, that's it. That's totally it. And that is too, like, why, you know, not just because I think it's a container that makes sense to me, but the holding the coach container being like a set program length of, I'm not a licensed therapist. So it's not an open-ended space where we come into and we have, like, specific goals. I'm teaching a specific skill, and it's not a skill that I can just give you three bullet points, you know, I feel like there's a lot of stuff in the coaching world that's like, let me teach you this method. And I'm like, that doesn't work for, I mean, I have some feelings about that, but in particular, I'm like, but if your body's a person and relationship with all people is always nuanced and always layered and always a long-term process, like, this is going to be nuanced and layered in the long-term process. So
yes,
if you hold space together for a length of time, 4 to 6 months, which is how long I work with people, then you're building a habit, you're gaining some tools and beginning to build a habit that then you and your body get to be partners and co-teachers and for the rest of your life. It's not that we're flipping a switch in a set length of time, or that I can just give you, oh, here's the bullet points of how to like know your body as a friend and off with you. Like it's not that simple. And like you're saying too, it's something that I've been doing for years through this like specific paradigm. So I think there's unfortunately a lot of the perception like via social media of like no, to put it really simply, I was doing this work internally before anybody knew who the fuck I was on the internet. So there's a lot of like, oh, you guys are seeing me 6 years into this process.
Yes.
You didn't see all that before, because I largely didn't even write about it or share any of it publicly anyway. So this is not a realistic place to anticipate yourself being in tomorrow.
Or in 6 months.
Yes.
Like it's like, when I'm working with my clients, I'll always tell them like, I am not here to fix you. I'm here to just open up your perception to show you that you are capable of healing yourself.
Yes.
And just showing it and just saying just like, if you like, yes, you've got a measurable goal of, I want to feel better. I want to feel good in my skin. I want to feel good about my desires. And I think also just the thing of, I want to feel good. Foreign concept for people.
Yeah.
Foreign concept that like you are allowed to feel good.
Yeah.
And that is such a beautiful thing when you see other people starting to get it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why I think the like personifying our bodies is so vital to doing that work too, because we would never look at another person and be like, sorry, you're not allowed to feel good, or get upset with them when they're pursuing feeling good and use the language of being like selfish, or, and maybe sometimes, but you know, far less often are we going to look at someone else that we are in relationship with and that we love and accuse them of doing something wrong in their pursuit of feeling good and feeling stable, feeling safe, feeling healthy, feeling well, and experiencing pleasure. Most of us are going to look at someone else that we love and trust and be like, yeah, I celebrate you in that, go for it. And yet somehow with us, it stops and we're like, oh, I'm not allowed to. And that's why this work of like, well, if your body is a person, you almost kind of separate in order to reintegrate. It's kind of this, I say a lot in my session, it's a kind of like sneaky kind of like backdoor entryway into these ambiguous concepts of like self-love and self-care. Because a lot of times we get tripped up on the self part of that, because many of us have been taught that doing anything self-based is selfish or sinful. So if I'm like, oh, my body's a person and I'm advocating on her behalf, or I'm doing things for the sake of her. And like, it's like this, like, again, she's not objectified. She's not separated from me, but I'm coming into a space of learning how to love myself by using all those same tools that I've been taught about how to love someone else that I'm in relationship with. And that's why her being a her matters so much. She can't be an it for that work to actually work.
Yeah. Something I've been working on myself with was, and it's like, shout out to you for turning me on to the spiral dance, which I have gone back and revisited so often. But what I've realized in my work of like, you know, studying, you know, more magic and craft work and studying, it's all, I'm like, this is, first of all, like, is all process theology, if we want to get into like the weird things of it. But what I found so beautiful is like, as I was reading it, like there was like a section of like, where does the male find himself within like the religion of a goddess? And something it says just like, find yourself as a child in the womb, being knit together and being loved and being birthed and being, you know, cared for and being restored. And I think about, like, I go back through my life. I was raised by my mom pretty much and like all the women of my family. And I turned out to be this lovely, sensitive creature. And for so long, I was so uncomfortable with like not being able to fit into what a stereotypical male was thought to be. So for a lot of my work on the front end is like, I really leaned into like my femme energy, and I still love doing it. And it's like, because I've been able to just like destigmatize my desire and my want of presenting femme, it's almost like that feminine power that lives within me is now able to heal the male aspect of my body and my personhood that doesn't feel worthy.
Yeah.
And it has been really cool for me to like, even, I'll call my body he most of the time. But like, you know, like she, they, because like we're all over the place depending on the moment. But like being referring my body as him and like, what does he want? What does he need? I often think of it as like when we all, like the hot new trend in therapy is people talk about reparenting themselves. Mm-hmm. And I often think that anytime I'm feeling a fearful emotion or an emotion that causes me to not act for my integrity, if you will. Mm-hmm. I often ask, I was like, what do you need, buddy? What's going on? And I'll talk to I literally will talk to myself. Mm-hmm. And I'll say, hey, you're pretty stressed out there. And he's like, yeah, I'm really stressed. He's like, do you need a nap? I'm like, yeah, probably. One time I was hanging out with a friend and I said, oh my God, I hate myself. No, I don't. I love myself. I'm amazing. And he said, you went full Smeagol on them right there.
Honestly, that's a great metaphor for what it feels like a lot of mm-hmm. times, going back and forth between agreeing with the fact that you've been taught to mistrust and maybe even hate yourself, or at the very least immediately interact with yourself through control mm-hmm. and shame. Mm-hmm. Like learning how to pivot from that to reacting to yourself and getting doing my client session I had earlier, we used the framing of gentle inquiry. Let's perform some gentle inquiry about what's going on here. And so being able to pivot to, instead of what is the thing I'm putting it to my brain. Instead of pivoting from control to curiosity and pivoting from shame to compassion.
Yes.
And that is so difficult to do. But again, in all other relationships, we have a metric for this being valuable. Like mm-hmm. in any other relationship with any other person, if we are constantly in our communication or avoidance of communication, pivoting to shutting down and shutting them down and shutting ourselves down because we are we're pivoting to shame and control all of the time, you're not going to get anywhere in intimacy and in vulnerability and connection. And so we know if you were to go to a relationship therapist, they'd be like, hey, probably a good idea to maybe begin to work with moving away from shame and moving towards compassion. Let's move away from control and move towards curiosity. Those questions of like, what's going on with you? Or my friend Madison, she's another coach. She used the question she said that she uses with herself. Said this a few days ago is, hey, what are you up to right now? Just like body checking me, like, hey, what are you up to right now? The one that I use a lot with my body is kind of like a framework. It's like, or it's like some phrasing. And I'll start with like, I love you, I'm listening, I'm here, and then see what comes up. And then I'll say, I thank you, I hear you, tell me more. Yeah. Or like, tell me more about that. Just like a really, like the way you would want to interact with a child who's having a lot of emotions come
that's
up.
And
you don't know how to express, and you're like, I lean in, come down on their level. I love you. I hear you. Tell me more about that. Tell me why this matters to you. Mm-hmm. And it's not easy. It's definitely not an easy thing to do, but it's very,
because of the, like, I think when you do it the first couple of times, like, and people just say, listen to your inner child. Like the ego wants to say, that sounds so stupid.
Yeah. My first like 2 years of therapy with my old therapist when I first started trauma therapy, I was like literally and metaphorically like arms crossed on the couch. Like, I know exactly what you're going to say. I know what you're going to tell me you do. I know you're going to tell me this is all about my mom and this is all about my dad and this is all, and you're going to ask me to get compassionate. And I was so resistant to the whole idea because it was my ego being like, I don't know, just deciding. I felt like most of my life I'd watched people try and help me. And try and break through those barriers as if I was watching a movie and I was being critical of the plot because I was like, of course that person would do that thing right now. That's so predictable. How dumb. Mm-hmm. I just resisted the shit out of all of it, which again makes sense. Mm-hmm. It's scary. It's vulnerable. That was a self-protective mechanism, but
yeah. And I think there's like this, the fear of, it's honestly, I think it's like a life or death kind of fear because especially for our friends who come out of authoritarian religious systems and conservative religion, it is that scary for them. It is that that serious for them to like begin to question their beliefs, like sends their whole, like their body has been taught to be afraid of anything outside of the norm and what's normative. So it's really like, I always asking, like, it's my question is always like, well, why do you believe what you do? And it's hard, even after identifying the lie, even yeah. after identifying, oh, this system is no longer valid, and yet I'm still working to, I don't know, like I'm working to like fit myself into this system or this plot line that really was never built for me, that I could not fit myself yeah. into if I tried, yeah. and if I do, it hurts.
Yeah.
But I just don't know what else to do because I've never imagined that I could just feel good on my own or feel good about my attractions or feel good about my my sex drive or feel good about being touched.
Yeah.
And so there's just the thing I always come back to, like one of my favorite quotes from The Course in Miracles is, you do not have to believe anything that is untrue unless you choose to, for all that may be undone in a moment, for it's simply a misperception. Mm-hmm. And it's a both and of just like, it can be that simple.
Yeah.
But it's as simple and as difficult as changing your mind.
Which is exactly what you, it's as simple as that. And it's as difficult as that. It's as mm-hmm. immediate as that, as it mm-hmm. is a never ending long-term mm-hmm. process of yeah. consistently changing your mind, which Jesus talked about too.
Cool. Listen, always full circle. I can't ever do it. And that's like what I think is like the, why I'm so like, I'm such a Course in Miracles junkie now. I'm on lesson 110.
Mm-hmm.
And it is all like, it really is about like the thing I've also come up with for myself is, what do I need to forgive myself for in this thing? Ooh, and a lot yeah. of times it's like, I don't even really need to ask for forgiveness because I didn't do anything wrong.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But my ego is telling me that I did something wrong, that I deserve yeah. this pain that I'm in somehow. Like, I didn't listen. I didn't do the right thing. And sure. If you want to like, I sometimes just like, I'll let you have it. Like, sure. Maybe I deserve to feel like shit, but guess what? I said I was sorry and I did my best. And I don't know what else you want me to do, ego. And the ego's like, I got nothing to say. And that's the thing. It's just like, at the end of it, it's like, for so many things of it, it's like, I think my healing my church, because like now it's one of those things where like, I'm not obsessing what like my old church is doing anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
that's a sign of growth for me.
Yeah,
it's definitely. Like, I'm not like, everyone's like, oh, did you hear what happened with Grace Midtown? I'm like, don't give a
no.
fuck. Like, oh, they're doing poorly. I'm just like, I'm not surprised. You know, yeah. they're yep. living in sand. LOL. But that for me has allowed me to like, I forgave myself for how much time I spent there.
Yeah.
Because there's a part of me that said, God, I wasted so much time. And it's just mm-hmm. like, I mean, maybe, sure. But also you couldn't have done anything different because no, who you were in that not. Moment, that's what you needed to survive, apparently. That's what yep. you wanted at yep. that time. And now you yep. want something different.
Yeah.
And that's fun.
And learning knowing that, like, I wouldn't be where I am now or have any of the things I have now had I not only been there and done all that, but done it, been there for exactly as long as I was
mm-hmm.
and done exactly what I did for as long as I did it. Mm-hmm. Like, even the timeline of those things is so fascinating to me too, because I mean, I have similar internal mm-hmm. stories of like, well, your body was sending you signals for years that you didn't know were specific signals of like, I'm unsafe here. I am deeply unwell. It was interesting when I was writing my book, was the first time when I looked back and realized that since high school, or so, after I graduated high school was the first time I went and did like actual missionary work, not just like going on a trip with my youth group in mm-hmm. high school.
More than 1 week.
Yeah. So I deferred going to college and moved to the typical white girl thing and went and moved to Africa.
Hallelujah. Come on now.
Yeah. And I went there for 7 months. Then after that, there was a different time where I lived in Thailand for a few months, also doing like missionary type stuff. Mm-hmm. And then my time in England, I think was there another one I was thinking of. I kind of classified when I moved to New York because I was doing like nonprofit type stuff mm-hmm. there. But it wasn't until I was writing my book that I looked back, because what got me out of the church space, which if anyone's read it, they know this, is like I started having panic attacks where I like couldn't physically stay in the room of the church I was going to at the time here in Tennessee. Mm-hmm. This was a few months after I'd come back from England. And so I was beginning to, and the research I was doing in school was like, oh, this link between our brains and our bodies, what's going on in our emotional world and how our bodies are telling us the truth about that. And it wasn't until I was like, oh, okay. So that's like something I'm springboarding off of, that I looked back, and every time I had like gone on one of those big missionary journeys or what have you, I got debilitatingly physically ill for like chunks of time. And the first time it happened was when I was in Africa. And I mean, it's such a long story. I don't need to like super get into it, but my family just started calling what was going on with my body. Like when I got back from Africa, doctor after doctor after doctor, they could not figure out what was wrong with me. We just started calling them my spells, but they never happened when I was just here in the States or just living, you know, normally. They only came up, like I hadn't had a spell for a while. And then after a few weeks of being in Thailand, it happened again. And I had to go to like the hospital in this village, and like they didn't, again, no one ever figured out what was wrong with me. And so it was just this like fascinating thing. I say all this to say, like, look, when I was writing it and looking back, being like, oh my God, my body was sending me these emergency messages since I was 18 years old. Yeah. Saying, get me the fuck out of here. And I didn't know it. And so I didn't do it. And so there's that part of me that's like, God damn it. I'm so sorry. I wish we had left before. Mm-hmm. But then I'm like, literally this wouldn't exist. Like I wouldn't have my job. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have all the things I have now. And a lot of the relationships I have mm-hmm. had things not happen exactly as they happened. Mm-hmm. So there is this space for, like you're saying, this kind of like self-forgiveness. I had a session with this woman who's an emotional alchemist back in January.
Cool.
And she gave me this idea of forgiveness, which was something like I've never heard before. Hmm. And she was like, you know, a lot of people, you know, call forgiveness one thing or will explain forgiveness in certain ways. She's like, I want you to imagine like a giant banquet table. And it's after a feast. And so, you know, there's spilled wine on the tablecloth, and there's like bits of food everywhere. And
chicken bones. Like, yeah, lots of chicken bones.
I pictured that too. I was like a medieval feast for whatever reason. Just like, yeah. You know.
I'm also picturing like the streets of Atlanta, because there's always chicken bones everywhere. Just look that down. Too.
Yep. Perfect for dogs. And so like, she's like, imagine just like post-feast, just everything is, you know, and she's like, I think a lot of times people think forgiveness is like cleaning up the mess means like, okay, this long, like one thing at a time, let me scrape all that, like, you know, like do it, like basically turning, you know, picking up the glasses, pouring out the, all the liquids, like gathering all the food scraps, getting rid of that, put the dishes in the dishwasher or like clean them by hand, whirl up to hit the tablecloth, like this long process. She was like, I want you specifically to start thinking about forgiveness as you just hands off of something you can't fucking fix anymore. And so what you're doing instead of this like lengthy process at the expense of yourself of trying to put everything back where it belongs, I want you to go in and take your arm and just run it down the length of the table and just say, fuck it. And it's all, and you're done. That's it. You're done. Don't fix it. Don't touch it. Don't do a single thing. You just like scrape everything off that table. That's the end of it.
Yep.
And it's just this like, it was an amazing analogy, but I also noticed the resistance coming up in my body. Like, but I can still fix it. Mm-hmm. But that's not right, because I still need to fix it. I still need to clean it up. I still need to clean up the mess. And she's like, make the mess and leave it. Let it go. Walk away.
Mm-hmm. Because like a lot of times it's like we perceive that we could fix those messes.
Yeah.
Like we think it's just like, if I just stay long enough.
That's it.
If I just hold on long enough, I can fix my partner. I can fix this relationship. I can fix my mother, my father. I can fix my best friend who's struggling with XYZ. I can fix my depressed friends.
Yep. And it's a form of self-forgiveness to just leave the mess.
Mm-hmm.
Just leave the mess. It's not my mess.
Not your mess.
Stop making it try and be my mess. Just fucking walk away.
Yeah. Just like, because like, go do something fun. And also a lot of the times, like if it's a mess that we can't clean up and we try to keep fixing it, we're making it worse.
That's it. Yes.
You know,
yeah.
I think about like in some of my old relationships, like, you know, I think about like the fucked up, even like if I did do some fucked up shit in my old relationships, and I did, I can't fix my ex. You know, I can't help him process the things I did in our relationship. When I was sitting in my therapist's office of like maybe like a month or so ago, and she told me, she's like, Kevin, you know, you bring him up almost every single session, right? And I was like, what? And she's like, you don't notice that? I'm like, no. And she's like, Kevin, I feel like you harping on it, what a bad person you are, is just an excuse to doing the work of actually letting it go. And it just like hit me right there, and almost like in an instantaneous moment, like I had this like moment of like he's sitting across from me on the night that I left, and I was just saying, hey, you're forgiven, you messed up, it's okay, and you can't stay anymore, you're forgiven. Yeah. Yeah. And that to me just like, it's like, what else are we gonna do? And it sounds like so simple.
Great question.
It sounds so simple and so dumb or whatever, but it's like, yeah. I mean, would you rather, and this is the question I have for myself all the time, is like, would you rather stay here in, you know, just feeling shitty about yourself and the shitty, shitty, shitty things you did? Or would you like a treat? Would you want to go outside? Do you want to like, it's like, do you need to eat something? It's just like, do you want to go have fun instead? And yeah. I'm like, yeah, I do. Yeah. I really would like to have fun.
And that was kind of Catherine's whole point, is like, how much time are you spending trying to clean up that table? When you could just sweep the whole thing and go do something the fuck else. That's it. Like,
you get your life back.
You get your life back. Yeah.
And it's wild. And it's like, we don't even realize how much time we're giving away.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it's like the future you, who you want to be, the happier you, already exists inside of you. And it's also this thing of just like, you gotta, it's like, I gotta, the time, I think forgiveness is like the time shortening thing. Like it shortens the time between this person I know I can be and want to be and who I am. It's just like,
yeah.
And oftentimes it's just a, if I can forgive myself for what I think I did, like the part of me that is loving and kind, the part of me that is dedicated and committed, the part of me that wants to give all of my heart to someone in a romantic sort of situation, that person already is there and is ready.
Yeah.
And all I have to do is decide.
Right.
And I hate putting a platitude out there, but like, it, like it's the most infuriatingly joyful thing ever, because it's like when I allow myself to slow down, like I think that's like why my practices these days like are so important to me, is because as I sit with it, as I do my work of healing, and like this is, and again, like you said, like we're 5 and 6 years into our own work, and you know, like I don't want, like I know that not everyone's healing is going to look like mine, but I know that like, I think now more than ever, I'm convinced that the practices that I have developed are going to be something that are going to help people. And also, the reason I know that is because it's helping me.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's, I feel like a lot of people are just like, that sounds like really egotistical. And I said, it is egotistical of me not to agree with God, not to agree with my own body when he says, bitch, you got this.
Yes. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's dive into the book real quick, just because that has been such a gift to me and to so many people, reading through it and really understanding what I went through. Mm. Like, that was such a gift. So tell us about your book, You Are Your Own.
Well, I have my...
The one that got you kicked off Instagram.
Not for resale. Okay, yeah. Well... That was a team effort between the two of us.
Yeah.
Well, actually, here's the thing. It really wasn't, because it wasn't about the cover. It was about the content. That's what got me kicked off. So, but.
Because you said Christianities are shitty peoples.
It was a hate speech, because I was targeting a specific group of people.
They kicked you off for hate speech? That's so stupid.
Yeah, you know, because like the original cover that you, because I don't know if you'll know this, but Kevin's the reason why the ebook first existed, because they're so wonderful and helpful and lovely, and I did not know how to do any of that shit.
It was a lot of fun. I loved it.
Thank you. You found a really cool like stock photo image, which was, I still think it's so beautiful. And at first I thought I got kicked off because of that image, even though that image doesn't violate any of terms and policies, but I eventually discovered that it was because the when it comes to like Instagram and Facebook, if they perceive you to be targeting a specific group of people, the biggest one being like, if literally just call out white men, like they'll say it's hate speech. Which I'm like, oh shit, well that's gonna be a problem.
Jamie, you were specifically targeting these poor, persecuted white men.
I mean,
and their God.
The thing that got me kicked off Instagram is the thing that allowed me to graduate, is that my advisors were like, you have to get specific. You can't just say all Christianity is bad. You can't just say all evangelical Christianity is bad. Like you've got to like dig in and get specific. So I was like, oh, it's white evangelical Christianity with these mm-hmm. core beliefs. But the more specific I got with it, that's what made it hate speech, is because it was a specific group.
Oh my gosh. That's what.
Literally, if I just been like, I hate Christianity, I wouldn't have gotten kicked off of Instagram because it's too ambiguous.
Too broad.
It's Christianity, but it's like even what, you know, anyway. Anyway.
Wow. Cool.
Yeah. But like you were saying, like it has helped. I love so much hearing from you and so many people that this helped people see themselves and understand their own experience because, and I will be perpetually in awe of that being something I was somehow able to give away to people because it was two and a half years of me trying my fucking hardest to understand what happened to me. And then that's how this existed, was me just trying to understand what happened to me. Mm-hmm. And so that's again, the irony of my supposed hate speech is I was like, but I was a white evangelical Christian. I'm just talking about my specific ground. So that's the only thing I'm educated to speak on. If I can't speak on different forms of Christianity or different forms, or I can't speak on it from a perspective of having like a racial background that I don't have. Like the only one I'm allowed to speak to and equipped to speak to is the one I came from because I have tons of experience in that one. So, but yeah, it's been really, really amazing in the last, it was almost exactly a year ago right now that the ebook and audiobook were officially out. And so it's been a bit shorter. I think we started doing the print on demand in like last summer. I'm not sure exactly when, but it's been cool in this last year to see how much it's resonated with people and specifically what you said, like helped people see their own stories and experiences inside of just telling mine, which was so hard and was also so worth it to do that. Mm-hmm. So
it's a brilliant book. And I think you do a really delightful job of balancing both the brutal honesty of the story with good poetry, in my opinion.
Thank you. It's just
really good. And I think that like the reason that I know that it's, I mean, like, just like, it's, you know, my favorite feedback is not all my, you know, good connection friends saying, oh, it was so good. My favorite one is the Instagram DM that says, your book has helped me. And I'm like,
yep.
And I think that it's really interesting. I mean, it's really interesting to be alive right now. What a stupid statement. But just like, if I were to like, look around, it's like, oh, like those who have the eyes to see it are saying, it's like, oh, we can see the holes in, you know, civil religion.
Yeah.
And we can finally see how civil white American Christianity in the evangelicalism is the antithesis of what we would actually hope a healthy religion to look like, or even a healthy society.
And part of that is because it's obsessed with civility. It's obsessed with decorum. It's obsessed with like maintaining these units, like the nuclear family, or like these units that are that appear like palatable to the way that capitalism and white supremacy has kind of like structured our world. White evangelical Christianity fits perfectly, and patriarchy as well fits perfectly in there because it upholds with some lovely civility, some nice floral printed civility, like it upholds these oppressive structures. And so again, since that is that, since that religion is so powerful and is so well financed, then it does become this thing where it's like actual real religion, actual real spirituality, and actual real Christianity gets labeled as being uncivil and as being like un-American. There's lots of words you can, like, on it, like, well, I mean, that one definitely, but just like unpalatable, like unattractive, like, oh no, just stay, like, stay in line. Like, or the thing you hear a lot from a lot of white folks whenever there's, or at least I grew up outside St. Louis. And so definitely in the immediate aftermath of Mike Brown's murder. But then for the next few years after, with everything that was going on in Ferguson and beyond, you'd hear this talking point of like, well, they just need to, you know, just need to like resist in a different way, or they just need to, you know, protest in nonviolent ways. So then a bunch of Black Lives Matter activists like put their bodies on the stretch of Highway 70. And it was like a deeply symbolic act because of what Highway 70, like what it connects, and it's a whole big thing. If you grew up in St. Louis, you understand why they chose that spot. But what it did is it kept white people from being able to get to work on time. And so it was this whole like, well, I thought you said nonviolent protest was fine. Well, yeah, but not that kind. What do you mean? Like, so it's like just this, like, it upholds this institution, this religious institution upholds civility in an oppressive manner, when really, actually, arguably, Jesus and many other mystics and spiritual teachers like him were in fact trying to show why civility is a prison. And we're talking about like, no, revolution and restoration and justice only happens when you stop valuing civility at the cost of, you know, at the cost of justice and at the cost of human life. But white evangelicalism is obsessed with civility. And that's one of the biggest, I mean, there's a laundry list of problems, but that's a big problem, is it thinks that like upholding civility and maintaining decorum is like the highest measure of morality.
And and for them, it's so, and what's so crazy is like, they don't even realize how very afraid they are of God and of stepping out of line. And I think of them like of each other. And like, they would never know that they were afraid, because they were never taught to feel that kind of like, for them, it's just like, oh no, that's the Holy, like they're the fear that lives in them. It's like, that's the Holy Spirit's conviction. I'm like, nah, dude, that's shame that's been heaped on you. It's different. It's a spirit of shame, honey.
Yeah. Yes. But I mean, tell them that. They're not going to listen.
There was some, so I want to pick your brain about something interesting. Like, few years ago, it was like right after the 2016 elections, I was having a friend with someone, and I said, people keep saying to me this, like, I shouldn't shame people for voting for Trump. And then I'm sitting there, I'm just like, well, I'm not shaming them. I'm just simply telling them that it was wrong. And if you feel ashamed of it, maybe it's because you did, like, when you, if you feel shame, two things are happening. One of two things is happening. Either one, the source of your shame is not real, and you can disregard it and you can go on with your life and, you know, heal from that. Or you're doing something you should be ashamed of. And I'm wondering, I'm like, it's just like, I don't want you to feel ashamed. I want you to change your mind. I want you to vote for somebody who's going to keep me and my friends alive. I want you to vote for healthcare. I want you to.
Don't be sorry, be better.
Yeah. It's, it's like, it's not that difficult. It's like, this is like both like the most personal and the most not personal thing in the world. It's like, I'm not telling you something you don't already know.
Well, and that's the thing, is like this hypersensitivity to when we recognize and name injustice, and then that reaction of like, oh, don't shame me, or don't shame them. And I think what you're saying is brilliant, of like, no, I'm just calling attention to what is unjust. I'm calling attention to behavior, decisions, systems that are by definition unjust. And if there are people who have participated or intentionally, knowingly or unknowingly participated, but especially intentionally made choices to uphold those systems of injustice, and they feel what they know to be the somatic experience of shame in their bodies as I'm pointing at this thing, that's not on me. Like, I didn't do that. Do that to you.
And that's also, I think, is a good marker of like what is true or what is real. The Course in Miracles in the first page says, the Course can be summed up in these two sentences: nothing real can be threatened, and nothing unreal exists. And so when I...
Hold on. Wow.
Yeah. So that premise is like a lot of like, Your eyes, oof. Sorry that I just wrecked your whole day.
No, that is, I only have one session after this, and then the rest of my day is just time to live in my brain. So this is perfect.
I love that statement because I think about it like in practices of faith or just like what I do now, like now that like I'm finally okay with saying I'm a witch and doing practices and not being afraid of saying that. Because it's true. And that's the thing is like what I'm doing and when I remember that nothing I'm doing needs defending, nothing I'm doing can actually be threatened by this big old system. So my thought is like as we're going around calling out injustice, when people are threatened or they get offended or they get upset with me because I'm saying that what you're doing is hurting me, if you feel threatened by that, one of two things is happening. Either I'm lying and it's not true, or B, because you can be threatened, you might, like, is your faith really true? My faith is being shaken. I'm like, if your faith can be shaken by a question, is it...
how stable is it?
Yeah, and well, that's again...
Well, the thing is, too, is I think any trustworthy faith deserves to be shaken by questions all the time, constantly. Mm-hmm. And so there's this false measure too of like, oh, that's shaking my faith. And even when we project that back and we're like, well, how stable is your faith then that could possibly be shaken? I think there's this like, I was actually just talking with someone about this because I had some interactions last week with a few different people that I'm in various capacities, like connected and intimate with, and then also like, you know, just we just know each other on the internet. But there was this one day last week that was so fascinating because I had three different interactions and people in various spots of connection who all are white women in like the spiritual kind of world, like the very kind of up here, like up in the clouds kind of spiritual world,
like the new agey homegirls.
Yeah, and it went and there is some sort of conflict that was happening in all three of these situations. Two of them are people I'm very close to in relationship with, and it was just miscommunication. And, you know, we were all committed to resolving. And one of them was a woman I've just been connected to in online space. And I mean, she straight up attacked me at 8:30 in the morning and like was committed to misunderstanding me. Stuff I didn't even know where some of the stuff she was getting was coming from. It was very interesting. I know now she's kind of known for doing this. Anyway, my point being, I took it and resolved what I could and then let go of what I couldn't. Like I said, this woman was committed to misunderstanding me. My two friends were not committed to misunderstanding me, and they were committed to our relationship. So things were communicated and resolved. But it started me thinking about my own relationship to even these like ideas of, you know, trading one form of spirituality for another, and even my own relationship to like witchcraft or using these intuitive tools like tarot and crystals and stuff like that. And because I had some people who know me really well and love me a lot who were, I was processing this with them, and they, three different people brought up the same kind of thing where they're like, you're more in your body than these three individuals are. They're kind of just like in their spirit. They're kind of way up here. And you've got a groundedness to what you do for a living and what you communicate and just how your brain works and how you process things like through your body. There's a little bit more earth to what you're doing. Right. And so you just kind of speak a bit of a different language than these, you know, three women. And I was like, huh, okay, how comfortable am I with shaking my own faith in or my own belief in or my own connection to these tools, because all three of these women, they do like astrology and tarot and Reiki and that kind of stuff for a living. That's their jobs. And I had someone that knows me very well kind of point out like, but Jamie, think about what all these people do for a living. And it wasn't a judgmental statement. It was, they speak one very specific language most of the time. You don't really speak that language most of your time. And I was like, oh, you're right. And so I started just thinking about like, even my own relationship to my relationship and what I hope a lot of people are doing as well, is not making even alternative spiritual practices another form of fundamentalism. Of being like, oh, you know, energy work is the thing. And like, I left love evangelical Christianity, but now I found the real stuff, and it's spell work, and it's, you know, sigil magic, and it's this, and I, and again, everyone's in their own process, everyone's got their own thing, but I at least for myself, want to make sure that I am not dipping over into this idea or telling myself this false story that, like, I know and I have no more questions because now I figured it out. And I do think that there very often comes up in these spaces of any sort of spiritual practice, whether it's pagan or, you know, authoritarian religion or anything, where you can dip into this, like, I'm beyond this idea, this lie that I'm beyond questioning what's going on.
I'm beyond critique.
Yes, I'm beyond critique. I'm beyond mystery. I'm beyond wonder. Very often for me, I know even my own relationship to some of these maybe more witchy or intuitive tools has been in an effort to take control and to understand my experience or someone else's experience in a way where I'm trying to avoid vulnerability. And I'm like asking the cards instead of having a hard conversation. Like, and that is how you end up dipping into fundamentalism ultimately, is by trying to engage control rather than that curiosity of like, can I just tell myself that I don't know what's going on here? And just let that be okay. And then just talk with other people really vulnerably about the fact that we don't really know what's going on here. And that's fine too.
Yeah. So, yeah. That is so spot on. Cause like, I think again, like when we leave our authority, like when we leave our home, we're looking for a new home. And oftentimes like we have to realize, I'm just like, listen, in the wild, wild west of spirituality out here in freedom land, you know, you got your tent. And sometimes you have a collection of tents with your friends, but a lot of times, like your body's going to ask you to break camp and keep moving because your body desires that motion, and your body desires to get where it wants to go.
Yeah, I don't want to get stuck anywhere. I mean, I really don't. I really, really don't.
Yeah, I feel myself like, I think I'm less scared of the question. I don't fear questions at all. Like, I don't even fear or like when I go home and visit my family and, you know, like I am who I am on the internet. And so like, I don't exactly tone myself down at home, but I'm not exactly putting out like a whole altar at home either.
Sure. Yeah.
But like, cause I think what's so funny is like my family, like we're all talking about the same thing on the deep, 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 deep level.
Yeah.
And I find that like when I'm able to, kind of like see what the my family is saying, like the thing behind the thing behind the thing. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, but you're getting like, you get caught up in these things, don't you? Let's talk about this thing. Mm-hmm. I just think it's, if I can be as curious with myself, if I can be curious with myself, I can also be curious with others. And I think it also, that has been part of my healing, is I'm no longer threatened by anybody. Even if someone like from an authoritarian background wants to question me and just like, who do you think Jesus is? It's like, oh, I believe that Jesus was a son of God. And I also say, I'm just like, but so are you, under my breath.
That's the fun part.
It's like, I believe. It's like, it's not, I always told my name dropping Sue Ann again. Sue Ann said one time, it was not a problem that I didn't believe my pastors. It's that I did believe them.
Yes.
It's like God loves you so much and will never do anything to leave you. And just like, really? That's so great.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, if you just listen for the spirit, God's always talking. Really? And then I did.
Oh, is she? Fascinating. Ooh, ooh. And then I listened and then I was like, cool. I think it's just going to be the two of us talking now. And then those pastors are like, well, no, that's not.
You got to be in community.
You're not allowed to do that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's always my thing. I'm just like, y'all always forget, like, people forget, like, Jesus didn't make Christianity. People did. Mm-hmm. Silly, silly people.
Well, we love you. People are forgetting that Jesus was Jewish in the first place. I don't know how you missed that part, but.
I'm on with somebody.
That was my conversation with the incredible Jamie Lee Finch. Jamie, thanks so much for being on the podcast. Girl, I miss you. I cannot wait till the world opens up again so we can sit across from each other and drink really boozy cocktails. You know, that just sounds right in my spirit. Anyways, if you want to get in touch with Jamie for any and all things, you can check out jamieleefinch.com. And if you're curious about her coven, it's open for business, baby. You can get in on that. All the details are over on her website. Jamie is an incredible woman, an incredible healer, and somebody who I respect so very much. So please, if you're interested in her stuff, go hit her up. She has got so many gifts to give the world, and I can't be more expressive. Like, I wish I could. Like, there's just so much good that comes with knowing and working with her. So that's jamieleefinch.com. Jamie, I love you. I'll talk to you later. That's it for today's episode, y'all. We did it. We made it through another week. So go ahead, and if you haven't already, please leave us a review and rating in Apple Podcasts, because it really does help get this in front of people. Like, it literally takes 2 seconds, and if you haven't done it and you've been listening for 111 episodes, like, come on, baby. You know, give a little back what this podcast has given unto you. Hallelujah. Hallelujah. Remember, the workshop's coming up very soon. I hope you will sign up for that. You should go get my book. You should go get Jamie's book, for that matter. It's called You Are Your Own. It's brilliant. It's beautiful. Anyways, I love you guys. Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of A Tiny Revolution. So until next time, please take your meds, drink your water, move your body in a way that feels good. Make sure you eat something delicious. Are you getting at least 6 to 8 hours of sleep a night? If not, baby, you need to go take a nap, because you deserve it. You deserve it. I love you. Thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of A Tiny Revolution. You're great. You're wonderful. You're beautiful. And I look forward to talking with y'all again soon. Bye.